less factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
That music can only mean it is the weekend. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And this Friday afternoon, a little bit later in the program, we will talk to Catherine Siebel, is the owner of a new shop. It's called Fearless Cooking up on the north side, northwest side, I think. And she has an interesting story. I love to talk to business owners who sort of follow their dream. And hers was pretty deliberate. She actually opened up a pop-up shop to learn how to open up her shop. We'll talk with Catherine about that in the second half hour. It has to do with cooking. The place is called Fearless Cooking, and I think they're just underway this week, maybe last week. We'll find out. Also on the phone line now is Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune, who joins us on most Fridays. Andrea, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, I just thought of it now. I wish I'd been thinking earlier. I would have come up with a generic name for Andrea Haines. I don't know what it would be.
That might be impossible.
There's this great story in the Tribune. It was written by David Lazarus out of the LA Times about generic drugs and how, you know, any of us who take medication, we wait for the generic drug, so it's much more affordable. But then you go to refill it or whatever, and you look at the name on the bottle, and it's almost always unpronounceable.
You know, I thought of this, like, what a great summer weekend where I was trying to pick easy, fun stories, and I managed to pick one with about 100 names in it that you and I are definitely not going to be able to pronounce.
Oh, well, I'm not going to try. I'm going to make you do it all the time. The story is, or the answer is, there are two women. The name of the office, it's in the AMA building, is called the United States Adopted Names Program. So when a drug company comes up with a generic, they are the ones who name it. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so there is a method to the madness, and honestly, I have to say, I was flabbergasted by this story. I would have thought that the names have some basis in science. Largely, they don't. You know, these are the names that come after the brand name, like Adalimumab and Empagliflozin, and, you know, you kind of think some of that might mean something, and some of it might mean a little bit, but these two women in Chicago are kind of monitoring these names and coming up with them in many cases.
So the idea is that when a generic comes out, it's more affordable, and so patients and doctors should presumably be prescribing the generic to help everyone save a little money. If you're the creator of the drug, you want them to keep using your more expensive drug. And so, for example, Pfizer is the drug company behind Celebrex. When they came up with their generic name, I guess they suggested it, and it was Celecoxib, and which is a name that these women say they would not approve now, because it sounds too much like Celebrex. There could be confusion, and you could actually be buying the more expensive drug when the cheaper one would be better for you.
Yeah, exactly. They said the standard now is that the generic has to be a different name, that's significantly different from the original brand name, because, of course, the brand name, it will be sold exclusively under that for a period of time. So people, you know, there's a ton of advertising, obviously, when a new drug comes out. People get very familiar with that name, so they might be drawn to a name that's very similar.
Okay, and, well, like Humira from AbbVie, that's, you know, that's omnipresent on TV. Everyone knows about Humira. The generic is just coming out or is out soon, and the new name for the generic is Adalimumab. Adalimumab. I think I said that right.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? They're all like that, although that in a way has fewer like Z's and F's and
how about
letters.
That story? When they're coming up with names, they don't create any new drugs with names or with the letters W, K, H, J, or Y, because they're pronounced differently around the world, and they want to avoid confusion.
Yeah, that too I thought was fascinating. You know, so they were talking about how much wordsmithing they have to do because they're hemmed in by, you know, these various considerations that we wouldn't think of.
But it's not wholly made up, right? They do rely on some sort of core, and then it's the prefix for the word that they have to come up with some creativity.
Exactly. And they mention lorazepam, which has the azepam on it, which would be shared with other similar medications, and things like cortisone, like derivatives of that might have court in the name. So there is a little bit of, you know, science to it. But they also said a lot of it is like, I'm looking at license plates for ideas. I'm looking at names of cats and dogs for ideas. So it was a really interesting read.
So next time Walgreens calls you with an automated message asking to refill your prescription and you don't know what the hell it is, you can blame these two ladies working in the AMA building just a few blocks from us right now.
Blame them and sound out the syllables.
You know, Coke was out with its earnings report this weekend, and a great story about that. It did very well. Big numbers for Coke. Their stock took off earlier in the week. And then I'm reading the story in the Tribune about it, and it has to do really not with Coca-Cola as we think of it, but with all these sort of new drinks that they're coming out with.
Exactly. And I feel like this is a little bit anti the conventional wisdom where we know people are drinking a lot less traditional soda, right? Less Coke, less Diet Coke, less Pepsi. But Coke and also Pepsi are actually doing pretty well because these kind of different products that they've moved into have taken off. Some of them are coffee-based. They might be healthier products. And those are actually really have those companies doing well.
So Coca-Cola bought Costa Coffee, and they now have a coffee Coke drink, right? Coca-Cola plus coffee?
Yeah, which, you know, Coke has always been there to energize us, right? So now they're just energizing us in a slightly different way, I guess.
Warning, too, to the developing world. In the conference call, the CEO said 80% of the world's population lives in developing markets like Africa, India, China, and the commercial beverage share of beverages there is just 1%. So they've got a lot of room to grow. In the developed markets, commercial beverages account for 3/4 consumption. Think of the difference there. In a developing world, 1% in the developed world, 3/4 of the consumption are these commercial beverages. So they've got a lot of room for growth.
Definitely. And I'm curious to see how that brings new flavors into the market, too. They're already doing pretty well with
Orange,
mango, Diet Coke, or things like that.
Well, so they do have orange vanilla. Orange vanilla
Coke. Yeah,
orange
vanilla is doing well.
That helped boost their numbers this quarter. Andrea, go out and have a nice rest of the weekend, will you?
I sure will. You too.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGNR. There was a study out this week from the NCHS on fertility rates in the country. And in fact, we are at an all-time low. The 2018 general fertility rate hit an all-time low for the U.S. In 2018. To help us sort out the numbers are Dr. E. Feinberg here, a fertility specialist and assistant professor at Northwestern University. Eve, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, I have to say, first of all, every morning when I come to work, one of the first things I do, I record a WGN radio newscast for Alexa. And when we do that, it's brought to you by Northwestern Medicine. Better knowledge means better health for you and your family. Turn to Northwestern Medicine at nm.org/healthbeatnews for health tips, research, and more. See, I basically have it memorized.
Excellent. It's a good resource.
Okay, so the numbers are down. Is this, and why are they down?
I think it's due in part to a few factors. So first, women are getting married later and are pursuing childbearing later in life. The average age at which women start having children has increased 4 years. It's still overall young, and that's offset by younger pregnancies. But as we have pregnancies at older ages, we're experiencing more infertility.
There's good news. Is this good news or bad news?
I think it's a little bit of both. Okay. Teenage pregnancies.
Well, I was going to say, there's good news there, right?
Correct. Correct. So it's not all doom and gloom. We're doing a better job with contraception. We're doing a better job with education. And we're seeing a decrease in teenage pregnancies.
So teenage pregnancies have they been on a general downward?
General decline.
For what, 20 years or so, 30
Something
years?
Something like that. We're doing a better job with that.
And so when it comes to, though, older adults or more, and we're not having as many children, is that a problem?
It can be. Interestingly, the whole premise of The Handmaid's Tale,
I love this,
is that the birth rate is decreasing, the fertility rate is decreasing, and it's not being replaced by live births. And so that whole sci-fi story was based exactly upon this premise: what happens in a world where we're not populating.
So do you think that novel from 20 years, 50 years ago is going to really tell our future?
I don't.
No. Okay, good. That would be a really bad thing. And so is there anything that we do other than observe this? I mean, do we try to
take action?
What kind of action do we take?
So I think action in two parts. One is education. There's a huge knowledge gap. Women often assume that infertility treatments are more successful than they are. The oldest age at which IVF has been successful using a woman's own egg is 45. And so women who have babies in their late 40s are generally using eggs from young, healthy egg donors. And so I think education of the public is one way that we can bring greater knowledge.
That's interesting. So, right, because you would tend to hear the success stories about that, right?
Correct.
If it's in the news, or can you believe the 72-year-old woman just gave birth? And so you think that it would always be possible, but the fact is those are real outliers.
Right, and even IVF over age 40 is not nearly as successful as people think that it is. And so I think that while we're really good at what we do and we've made huge leaps and bounds, we're not as successful as people think that we are.
So the advice to women and men, really, men who want to have children, is that you can't wait forever.
You can't wait forever. There's also the advent of oocyte cryopreservation, or egg freezing, which has lots of challenges, and it's certainly not a perfect science, but it is an emerging option for younger women to freeze eggs to then save those and use them at an older age.
Is that new? I thought I'd heard about that for some time now.
It's been around since about 2007, and the experimental label was lifted in 2013. So it has been around for a while, but now it's increasing.
So let's assume we're talking about married couples later, right?
Sure.
Not just individual women. So married couples wanting to have children later, we're talking about women and their fertility. I would imagine it's a similar story for men who want to get their wives pregnant.
Correct. And we do see decreases in fertility rates in men as well, though not as marked as women.
It's more likely in women.
It's more likely in women.
Okay. So, right. So when you hear about the birth rate dropping, the first reaction might be, it's not a terrible thing, given the environment and things like that. The second reaction is, go to Netflix, watch The Handmaid's Tale or Hulu, and then we'll see just where the problems are.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Eve Feinberg from Northwestern Medicine. I appreciate it. It was nice to meet you.
It was nice to meet you, too.
Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Friday afternoon. All right. In the studio now is Catherine Siebel, who is the owner of Fearless Cooking. It's been up and running for, well, this is its fifth day. Welcome.
Woo. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
What is a sociologist doing in the cooking business?
Well, when I had young children, now my kids are 7 and 8, but we moved to the Portage Park area, which is a lot of bungalows, a lot of young families. And I started noticing that I had neighbors and friends who were asking about cooking. They wanted to cook something healthy for their kids, but they didn't really know where to start. So they would ask about things like French toast, or I've had people ask me how to make rice. And I was an enthusiastic home cook, but not a professional by any means. And I started thinking about this concept of how it is that maybe there's been at least a generation of people who grew up maybe only seeing microwave food. And so I decided, I wonder how I could help them. I wonder how I could fix that so that people can cook for themselves, cook for the people that they love. It's a healthier approach for them and for their family.
Okay, so I asked you this kind of off the air, and maybe I didn't do it well because we kind of stumbled in our exchange. But is this about running and opening a business of your own, or is it about neighborhood improvement? Well, I mean, I'm sure it's a hybrid of both.
It's a hybrid of both, for sure. I'm new to the business world. and so I spent about 2 years really learning about it. I took all of the SBA classes. I did everything I could to really sort of ramp up because the concept is intuitive and easy to me because it's my idea, but the business aspect took a kind of a steep learning curve.
So you've been at this for a couple of years.
4 years.
4 years you've been planning this.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about then, really, I want to go back to what's in your heart or your brain about it then. What is it that's driven you to put not only come up with this idea, but to put that much time in it before it even opened?
I wish that I could explain it to you. The idea sort of came to me fully formed one day. I mean, almost completely. So I started keeping a journal, and I have on the very first page what I had in mind, which is what we have today, which is a sustainably eco-friendly minded cookware store geared at everyday home cooks at every skill level.
So what kind of classes are you offering?
So our classes aren't up yet because we've only been open 5 days. In the next few weeks, though, we're launching a series of classes. We're going to have an entire 101 series, fish 101, meat 101, eggs, grains, just the real basic foundational things that people can go home and use that night.
So I think the story about you so far then has been the preparation. And so you had hoped to open last year,
mm-hmm.
couldn't quite get through all the hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
So you opened a pop-up store.
That's right.
And was that more about selling things or sort of sort of tapping on the brains of the
people who had already built the momentum within the neighborhood, and there was a lot of sort of pent up excitement about it. And I felt, you know, because I had already announced on Facebook and all of these things saying we're going to open soon, and then when it was clear that we wouldn't be able to open in time for the holidays, I just thought it was a real missed opportunity, both business wise and just sort of community wise. And so we did a pop up where we didn't have classes, we just sold goods. But I mean, for us, it was ended up being a great tool, because through that we collected over 1,000 emails. We had 700 unique customers walk through the door. We got a lot of social media following, and so that really helped us launch our permanent location on Monday with already some support.
You know, you've been open for 4 days now. Mm-hmm. What are you doing in a radio studio?
I have an amazing team. And again, the pop-up really helped with that, right? Because we had built the team there first. And right. So, you know, I've got Chris at the store right now, and she's doing a great job. And so we just have a great team that has worked really hard and has really been with me through the ringer of trying to get the store open.
Is it scary a little bit to you?
Not anymore. It was because terrifying that I couldn't open.
It was terrifying that you couldn't open last year.
I mean, 2 weeks ago, before I had my last inspection. I just thought, like, right, because I've been paying rent. I've been paying rent since a year ago, February. So, like, the money has been dwindling. I've been terrified about that. I've been terrified about not being able to support my staff. And so, but no, as soon as the very nice inspector, health inspector that I had, I almost kissed him. My daughter was with me. She's 7, and she was with me when he was sitting there filling out the form. And then as soon as he left, he walked out the door. She said, "Can we dance now?" So.
Oh, that's sweet. So you were frightened then, but when you opened the door, mm-hmm. because you've sort of already opened the door, mm-hmm. in a way. Yeah.
And we've had really supportive customers. Everyone on our team lives in the neighborhood. Everywhere we go, all the time, people are, "When are you going to open? When are you going to open?" We know that we have the support of a great neighborhood. And also just, I've believed in this dream a lot to not get paid for 4 years. And so now I'm just excited.
4400 block of North Milwaukee, right?
4410 North Milwaukee.
Okay, so when people walk in, what do they see?
What they'll first see is a teaching kitchen. We did our best to make it look like a home kitchen.
That intentionally, right?
That's right.
Why?
We want it to look like a home kitchen because we want everything that you make there, you have to believe that you can go home and make it that night with no problem. So it just looks like an everyday home kitchen. I mean, you know, now it's a nice one because it has, you know, your kids haven't been in it. But but then past that is our entire retail section. We focus strongly on as many local products as possible, more sustainably minded products. We have a lot of Chicago vendors. We try to find vendors who are doing good work. And so we have some gourmet food, cookware, some gifts.
So do you think timing is you're tapping into where the rest of the world is sort of revolving toward?
I think so.
Explain that for me.
Well, so I think that, you know, so for example, we've been doing promotions all week on Plastic Free July, which is a huge movement.
What is the, explain that for me.
So it's just in July, people try to make a commitment to use plastic, right? So we've been doing promotions in that way.
I'm going to hide my coffee cup from you.
No problem. Yeah. I won't judge today. I've cared about the environment and been passionate about it for a long time. And I think that there's something, you know, we can do stewardship within business. We just have to commit to it. And right. So we're going to have composting. We'll do cookware recycling. We'll do, you know, like I said, we try to find products that are compostable, recycle, made of recycled products, local as much as we can.
And so there's that, but then there's also this, and that's the stuff we're putting back on the earth, but there's mm-hmm. the stuff we're putting in our body too.
That's exactly right. I think that the food landscape has really changed over the past 20 years, right? And we're all becoming more aware of what's better for our bodies is really just, you know, pure natural ingredients, right? And knowing how to put those together in a way that's easy, that's healthy, that helps you take good care of yourself and your family.
The name of the store, you call it a store?
We do, Fearless Cooking.
And it's open now, 4410 North Milwaukee Avenue.
Mm-hmm. It's open every day from 10 to 8.
It's been 4 years in the making. When will you know if you've made it?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I should... I have to ask my accountant.
Well, in many ways, I think you've made it because this is something you just wanted to open your doors.
That's right.
But it's obviously tough to keep a business open and running for a while.
I think so. I mean, I've worked really hard on trying to figure out what it is that people want. Like we said, I was a sociologist first. I did surveys. I did interviews. I did focus groups. I did observations of people who aren't comfortable cooking and tried to figure out what that meant. And so uh-huh. We're targeting our classes. We've targeted our store towards that. We're going to have an entire section of the store that's just for new cooks to try and just pull their attention to just like 12 basic tools that they need to get it started. So I don't know. How will I know if I've done it? I think if I can open another one in another city that's warmer in the winter.
That's a very good idea. Yeah. But then you've got the kids. You got to get them through school first. It's not a perfect plan.
It's always about the kids.
But you take a long time anyway, so
no, that's
fine.
Right.
Catherine Siebel, I wish you the best of luck. Sounds like a great idea.
Thank you so much.
I love your energy behind it. Good luck.
Thank you, Barry.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. To those who are new to the Outcome Health story from Chicago, here's a brief recap. A health technology company in Chicago builds its way up to unicorn status in only a couple of years. They get a lot of national attention, they partner with a bunch of people, and they get a bunch of funding money. And then accusations of overcharging customers and falsifying documents forced the co-founders out of the company. And now, recently released FBI documents show probable cause that the co-founders and a couple other employees, quote, conspired to commit wire fraud, end quote. Sometimes that fall from the top is grander than the rise. But aside from that, let's focus on some positives, like the alternative energy industry. And AMP America is finding a new source that's, cow waste. Chicago-based AMP America's just raised $75 million to join the alternative energy fight. Coming from the heartland and using cow waste, this is a no-brainer. We've got plenty of that. Especially since more and more reports are showing that the methane from the cow waste is impacting the environment more than we thought. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.